It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Yep, Sherry Jane from Monday Wire has her regular chat with Green Party co-leader James Shaw this morning, and they touched base on the first day of Alert Level 3. James Shaw also spoke on the Green Party's $1 billion nature-based jobs economic stimulus package proposal and supporting local businesses and vulnerable communities during this time. Sherry began by asking James Shaw on updates to the COVID-19 situation.
I think the important thing to remember that level three doesn't actually mean that the lockdown is ended. It just means that some of the restrictions have been lifted. And so what we've got to be careful of is, you know, that everyone's been locked up for 4 weeks. We just want to be a bit careful about people suddenly throwing all caution to the wind and setting us back. So I think the main messages are, you know, stay at home where possible, including, if you can, continue to work from home or in the case of students, you know, to keep doing online education, keep doing internet shopping where you can, that kind of thing. That's really important for the next few weeks. One of the things that's been changed is that people can now travel regionally, but again, it's, you know, just when it's necessary. And, you know, if you maintain thinking about your bubble, you can, of course, maybe expand your bubble to maybe one or two other people, but just be very careful and keep it as small as possible. Same as always, if you're sick, stay at home and keep physical distancing, i.e. 2 meters apart. Keep washing your hands, coughing into your elbow, you know, all of those things that we've been doing since the pandemic started.
Seeing a lot of people going back to work, going to school, you know, some who are part of that community. And so I was wondering what the guidance is from the government in terms of supporting people in their choice to go back to work or to work from home or to take time off.
Yeah, look, my colleague Goldrees Garaman's done quite a lot of work with the responsible ministers to ensure that there's particular guidance for vulnerable people at alert level three, and for people who, you know, for example, if you're immune suppressed, if you're elderly or you're working with the elderly, or, you know, if you've been on medical treatments recently that, you know, would put you into that vulnerable category, you know, make sure that you go to the COVID-19 website and take a look at the particular guidance there, and the support structures that we've set up in terms of support payments for people, guidance for businesses who are employing people who may be vulnerable, all of that kind of stuff over the last 4 weeks. I think we're to a reasonable level now. And it is really important, in particular, I think, that employers familiarise themselves with that guideline, because obviously not everyone, you know, it's not immediately obvious necessarily that someone is immune suppressed, right? And so it is important that people are supported to continue to work from home where they do have those kind of vulnerabilities.
And you're also seeing some relaxing of some of the, obviously, the travel restrictions, being able to visit the beach now and just having a bit more range of mobility. And I was wondering about the support given to our elderly community. So obviously, it's important that everyone has the right to work, to exercise, to access essential services. But unfortunately, we also have a lot of deaths within the elderly community from COVID-19. So kind of what support is given there?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the first things that became apparent to us about the pandemic, of course, is that the older you are, the more at risk you are. And, you know, there's a particular sort of tipping point north of about 50, and then again north of about 70. And that's why even before we went to level 3 and 4, we were saying to people 70 years older and above, please stay at home. You are putting yourself at risk otherwise. It is really important to remember that, you know, we've got about 270 active cases. We're still getting about 5 or 6 new cases every day. And so even though we've been in lockdown for the last 4 weeks, we are still getting, you know, cases that are emerging. And so there is some level of risk still out there. And so I think for older people, you know, continue to act as if this was a very clear and present danger.
Yeah, obviously everyone is also very excited that takeaways are now available. The discussion has been around larger takeaway chains. I was wondering
people queuing outside McDonald's.
Yeah, that's the one. That's on my mind, McDonald's, KFC. I was wondering, you know, in terms of local businesses, your local cafe down the street, or some businesses who might, you know, might not have as big as a brand or as big as a marketing strategy. Is there any support in terms of, you know, supporting our local businesses as well?
Yeah, look, the Minister of Finance, Grant Robertson, has been putting together a specific package of support for small business, which should be coming through sometime in the next week or two. Of course, small businesses, we were very careful when we first started the wage subsidy scheme and, you know, some of the other various support tools that we put up in place, you know, a month ago, to make sure that small businesses, solo, you know, contractors and free agents and so on were able to access those because, and you know, they're kind of most at risk of the economic disruption. There are also a series of new kind of websites that are tailored to, you know, small, you know, non-chain restaurants and cafes and so on for home delivery. So my wife and I, for example, are lining up a home delivery from a restaurant, which is just a small restaurant down the road from where we live, lining up a home delivery from them, just as a way of making sure that we're still trying to support local businesses.
I saw that the Green Party is hoping to push for a $1 billion economic stimulus package that was based on nature-based jobs. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit on that as well.
Yeah, look, I'm really sort of pleased with the reception that we've had from the public about that proposal. Essentially, the idea is to say, look, let's not just go build a whole bunch of roads, which is a kind of historically what New Zealand governments have done when they needed to stimulate the economy. Actually, if you look at the jobs that are being lost, particularly in tourism and the regions that those jobs are being lost in, such as, you know, Central Otago and so on. Actually, there are a ton of projects that are urgent, and if we want to save New Zealand's native bush and our birds and so on, to do with riparian planting to look after our rivers and streams. There's predator control work. There's wilding pine work. And actually, a lot of the people who were in tourism were actually in nature-based tourism. A lot of those jobs would be reasonably easily transferable into these sort of conservation type projects. And actually, it's very, very scalable. So given that we are about to experience a significant increase in unemployment in New Zealand, it makes sense for us to think about what are the things that we can do over the next 12 to 24 months to employ as many people as possible, but also to resolve some of the long-term challenges facing the country, such as the state of the environment.
And within this, or you know, outside of this package as well, what kind of support are given to local communities to kind of help, I guess, yeah, start a bit more economic movement, also just support in general? Because losing a job and losing a business can be extremely stressful. So kind of what has been done in terms of that kind of area?
Well, there's two things, right? So one is that things like the leave support scheme, the wage subsidy, you know, all of those kinds of things are applicable to businesses no matter where they are all over the country. And, you know, we know, for example, with the collapse of the tourism industry, that there are particular concentrations. So, you know, places like Queenstown and others will have huge spikes in the numbers of businesses that have foreclosed and significant numbers of unemployed people. And so we are also working on the next stage of the economic recovery program, which is really with that kind of phrase, the shovel-ready project. So what do we know that's out there that we could move quickly on, particularly in regions where you've got a sort of a disproportionate spike in the effect from the economic fallout?
I guess climate change is still a pressing concern, as always. In terms of our recovery scheme or the direction we're moving forward as we move down the alert levels, what are there any other packages or structures being set up to deal with? Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, I hope that you would have seen me talk about this over the course of the last few weeks. So at the high level, you know, what I've been saying is that, look, in order to get us through the COVID-19 pandemic crisis, we are borrowing tens of billions of dollars off our children and our grandchildren, you know, to kind of get us through in the short term. But those long-term challenges haven't gone away, and those long-term challenges were also going to be paid for by our children and grandchildren. So therefore, we've got both a moral and an economic duty to use that money today to resolve some of those long-term challenges whilst we're re-stimulating the economy. And so in all of the areas where we've got high emissions, you know, whether it's energy, transport, building and construction and housing, you know, industrial heat, you know, manufacturing, you name it, there are things that we can do that would help to stimulate the economy, but also really quite rapidly start to decarbonize the economy. And so the smart thing to do, I think, would be to invest our money in those things.
Yeah, personally, I'm really looking forward to seeing the financial packages for the next week, because my parents own a cafe, and yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind, bit of a difficult time. Yeah, and I think I imagine a lot of other people are in a similar position if they're themselves are cafe owners or restaurant owners. And
That's right. The next few weeks is going to be really, really critical for the hospitality sector. And we know that we're not going to be able to keep them all afloat, because many of them were, you know, servicing the international tourism market or able to supplement their income from the international tourism market. So it is going to be a very, very tough time. But we will, you know, do everything that we can to ensure that they've got the best chance that they can.
And maybe this is something that will be more apparent in the coming weeks. We will be losing some businesses. What support is given in terms of that process of closing down a business? Or
one of the things that we did a few weeks ago that it worries me that not enough businesses have taken this up is this idea of rather than going insolvent, that actually you have the option of going into hibernation. So, you know, for example, a cafe, all the hard assets are still there, right? The kitchen is still there, the cutlery is still there, you know, the tables and chairs are still there, you know, all of that stuff still exists. And the idea is to say, well, rather than run the risk that you would never reopen and that essentially that business would be insolvent, can we simply create a legal mechanism whereby, you know, it sort of goes into hibernation? We've created that possibility. If you can get the agreement of a majority of your creditors to sort of essentially defer, you know, repayments, which a number of them will, you know, just because they're being realistic about it, then actually that option exists. And I think that businesses should look at that if they are at risk of shutting up shop.
Yeah. What was anything else you wanted to add?
Well, yeah, just to say that we have heard many, many stories about students who are really struggling, and in particular this issue of student accommodation, with some students still having to pay for accommodation that they aren't actually able to use. Just want to say that the Greens are onto that, and Chloe is fighting the corner on that one.
Definitely have a lot of mates who are in different cities at the moment paying for uni accommodation, so it's a bit of a...
Yeah, I'm hoping we'll have some more to say about that in the next week.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.